session two. Now we've seen the case studies. Let's talk about a systematic approach to church multiplication. That's what we're really talking about. It's a strategy that results in ongoing multiplication of churches so that the ministry capacity of the association expands. You remember the sand table. The only way you're going to be able to minister to the increasing population of your association and the increasingly divergent population of your association is to expand the ministry base. And that means planting churches, because the old churches typically will not expand in such a way that they will contribute significantly to that, although they will shepherd the people they're currently ministering to. Some prerequisites to a system is you have to have a leader willing to engage the problem. In each of these cases, there was a point person. It doesn't have to be the ADOM. It has to be someone the ADOM affirms. There has to be somebody to be the point person. If it's everybody's responsibility, it's nobody's responsibility. The second thing is there has to be a compelling message to raise awareness and recruit a few pastors to the task. Each of these guys put out the message that we have a problem that we need to address. And they made that message compelling. Usually, to me, compelling means it has to be rooted in our kingdom obligation. That we, like everyone else, are under a mandate to extend the kingdom of God to the ends of the earth. And we've been given a stewardship. We've given a piece of geography. As a director of missions, you have a piece of geography. Not just stewardship over souls, but it's the souls in a piece of geography. So the compelling message has to be connected with how are we going to not just plant churches, but church a region. Get the message to every people group, every nook and cranny of that place. That's our responsibility. That's compelling when you connect it to the kingdom. And you need an association willing to let the staff try and make a difference. You know, that's always great, man. We'll pray for you, brother. Go for it. Well, that really is all you want at this point, because you don't want the reluctant leading the charge. What was Paul's word? You know, if you're going to blow charge, blow charge. If you're going to blow retreat, blow retreat. But don't play a medley. You know, a friend of, or a guy on tape once said that from his, if the trumpet makes an unclear sound, who's going to respond to that kind of signal? So you want somebody that will play charge, not people that are half-hearted. Although, I will say that over time, their hearts will change. Anyone with a good heart is moved by the evidence of the movement of God's Spirit in the world around them. And you can change the whole spirit of an association as you begin to plant churches. Some issues you have to address. First, the strategy can't depend on pulling members out of existing churches. And somehow, the strategy needs to be presented in such a way that that fear is not raised. Nor on a significant increase in the average church's giving. You've got to figure a way to fund this without making large demands on stable, non-growing churches who don't have an expanding budget. The money is already committed. The second thing is no one entity, no matter who they are, can have unbridled control over a church plant project. This is disastrous. And I would say almost always results in either the failure of the project or the crippling of its ability to reach people with the gospel. You have to choose a church planter you trust. And then, having committed your trust to him, unless he violates something ethically or morally, you have to trust that God is guiding him in his strategy. The system, whatever it is, has to be able to resist outside pressure that would subvert the process. Now again, the state guys here, you'll understand that you probably would never make this call, okay? But there might be a state exec somewhere that would make the call to the ADUM saying, look, you know, if we can just get one more plant, we'll have matched our record from last year, or we'll get an award from the North American Mission Board. Let's see if we can go for it. But I don't have a planter. I don't have the infrastructure. Oh, come on. I'm really counting on you. Pressure. So you need to be able in the system to resist outside pressure. The planter has to be able to implement his vision, but with accountability for results in character and theology. The way Dr. Minton puts it is, at the accountability meetings, they're accountable for the results of their strategy. You have the strategy. You say it's from God. What has God done through this strategy? What have been the results this quarter? So, those are some issues that have to be addressed. Let's talk about a model system. From these two case studies, I think we can define the components, the processes that have to be in place to develop a system that works. The first thing is you need a process to develop a prioritized list of strategic church planting sites, people groups. Now, for some associations, this may be a new thing. Take heart, there are resources from the North American Mission Board. There's a research site. There's also the ability to make a request for demographic material by zip code and JD by ring study. They'll also do a ring study or a particular zip code. So you can make a request through the state convention to have the demographic material on a particular area. I know when I was a strategist, I used to make huge demands on the North American Mission Board for the Portland metro area. I wanted studies on every zip code, on the whole area. There's also help available if you contact, JD, he's the expert in this area, on how to get demographic and people group information. North American Mission Board is beginning to develop the database by people group. They can tell you what people groups live in your area and need to be reached. So, although this process may require some new initiative, some new research, it's essential that you be able to find the sites, good sites for church plants. Now, some of them come on their own. I was just in Montreal, and Gary Smith is the regional strategist for Eastern Canada, which means he has about 5 provinces that are his responsibility. That's far more territory than his travel budget allows him to cultivate regularly. But God in his sovereignty, as Gary's prayed, as other people have prayed, people have called him. He got back from vacation just before I went up there, and he said, the day I got back, I got 5 phone calls from people. The conversation was typically, hi, you don't know me. I don't really want any money, but I'm planning a church, or I want to plant a church in this town, and I heard about the Canadian Convention of Southern Baptists, and I really want to be a part. Can you help me? Well, let's see. Yeah, probably. Now, well, he's had 5 phone calls since he got back from Christmas break. He has a pending list of 40 for 2007. He has a total list of 80. So sometimes God in His sovereignty, as you engage in the process and there's a commitment to reach your region, to church your region with the gospel, the Lord begins to move the hearts of individuals to call you. So that's another way that you end up with a list of places and sometimes people. So that process. A process to develop a pool of qualified planters and match them to strategic sites. Qualified planters, as we look at it with the North American Mission Board, it really means 3 things. Well, 4 things. One is that they're wired for church planting. Everybody has a leadership style. And church planters do really well if they're more entrepreneurial, if they can start things from scratch, if they can create chaos. We can parachute drop them in someplace and something's going to happen. I have a friend, Dr. John Wooster, I've worked with for many years, and he's highly entrepreneurial. And I truly believe you could put him anywhere and he would come up with a church plant. He's planted churches in Moscow, Russia, in Atlanta, in Huntington Beach, California, in San Francisco. After about 6 or 7 plants, my read on it, he just got bored with planting churches one at a time. It was just like, it was so routine. You know, he had done it so many times. So he decided he would try a new concept, team church. And he would pull together seminary students and train them to catalyze church plants. So this was good. He could plant 4 churches at a time. And so he's done that for about 3 years. You know, 4 churches every year. And he's blessed a lot of associations as he's partnered with them, you know, Southern Baptist associations in Texas. But just this year, again, my read on it is he got bored. 4 at a time is just, you know, he can do that. So he's come up with a strategy, and he's working with the Southern Baptists in California. He's going to plant a string of churches along the beach, 15 or 20 of them. And he's planting 4 or 5 churches in Hyderabad, India at the same time. And he's coaching, I think it's several hundred Ukrainian church planters that have planted about 1,000 churches over there. He's entrepreneurial. Any place he goes, he creates a stir and people start getting saved. We look for that in church planters. We want someone who can go into some place and he can see what God can do. And he has the gumption and the skills to share the gospel. That's the second thing. It's one people that are skillful. Dr. Payne teaches several church planting classes, and the point of it is to give people the basic skills of what do you do. You unpack your suitcase, you hang the pictures on the wall, and now what? And so we've developed courses to teach people what to do. The third thing is they have skills, not just knowledge, but skills. We like to put people in the field for a trial run. Let them work with a veteran church planter. I like to see if a church planter candidate can go into a new community and through evangelism bring together a group of seekers into a Bible study and lead some of them to Christ. Can he initiate relationships, gather people, win them to Christ in the context of a Bible study? Skill. So wiring, knowledge, skill. And then the fourth thing is, do they match where we're going to put them? Every subculture in North America has certain characteristics that bias it towards a certain type of leader. So we want to make sure that the people we put in the field are matched to the people they're trying to reach. So there needs to be a process to develop a pool of these qualified planters. Now, not all of them need to be seminary graduates. Although, right now that's my life, training seminary students to plant churches effectively. But I don't know what your association or your convention's like, but in Texas, I think the figure 70% of our pastors have no theological training. And a lot of churches get planted by people with more gumption than sense, you know, to say it in a country way. And they actually, by the grace of God, get it done. And theological education comes after the fact, on the job, on site, as we continue to nurture them, or hopefully do. So we're not saying that this person has to be a seminary graduate. There also needs to be a process to form a strategic planning team, a team of partners, unique to each project. That's part of what these two DOMs discovered, or these two systems discovered, is that it works best and it increases partners best if each strategic planning team is unique to the project. You form a team for that project, and they focus on that project. They're concerned with that church planter and his success. So that's an important part of the system. You may have a mission committee that's concerned with the strategics of the whole thing, whether it's the state convention or the local association. They look at the big picture. But when it comes down to a particular project, a team pulled together for that project is more effective. You also need a process to preserve and expand the resource base. How are you going to get new partners? How are you going to find new money? How are you going to find new planters when you've used up all those that are in the pool? There needs to be a way to expand it. In the case of these guys, they have a system where each plant becomes a partner soon or in the near future. So they expand their partnering through the churches they plant, as well as inviting other people. And then finally, this fifth one is a kingdom perspective process. Train other agencies in similar contexts. When you find something that works, don't keep it to yourself. Tell people about it. Train somebody else. If you're an association and you find a process that works, then tell your brother association next door and help them implement it too. Help them customize it. Because we have 300 million citizens in the United States, 30 million in Canada, and maybe 220 million of them don't know Jesus Christ. We really can't afford, as good stewards, to keep what we find works to ourselves. We need to get it out there. So, a model system, those five processes. Let's look in more detail. Who? It needs to be a major part of somebody's job description to find sites. This can kill the whole process from the very start. If the answer to a church planter who calls you and says, I feel like God may be calling me to come to your area to plant a church, what do you have available? What places do you want a church? And the only answer you can give is, well, I don't know. Let's talk. No, somebody needs to be keeping track of where initiative's been taken with you, strategically who's moving into the area, where a church has died and there needs to be a replacement to minister to that area, where growth is happening and people need to be reached. And it, it needs to be continually reprioritized with input from the ADOM. This has to be a hot list, one that's kept up to date, one that's not just put in the back of a notebook and forgotten, but it needs to be worked. And that requires a particular person, because if it's everybody's responsibility, it's nobody's responsibility. Second thing, sites and groups are the warp and woof of targeting plants. So you need both geographic and demographic information. And what I mean by that is in Louisville, as an example, there are geographic areas, we were talking with the students yesterday, there are geographic areas which need a church. Geographic. If you study them, you may find, well, everybody in there is pretty much the same. We've got suburban, young, middle class, professional homeowners with kids 2 to 4 years old. That's who lives there. And it's an area of, 5,000 people. Well, that's a pretty homogeneous group, and that geographic area you can target a plant. But we're talking about an area yesterday in Louisville that has, it's a smaller area, it's inner city, and the people groups there are very diverse. There's wealthy homeowners gentrifying this area by buying old Victorian houses and rehabbing them. Many of them are gay. There's a strong homeless population, and the homeless population in almost any place in America tends to be majority single, older, a lot of mental illness or other addictions or problems that has resulted in homelessness. There's a strong college population who are very transient. They rent places. Some of these Victorian houses are broken up into apartments, and they live there for a short amount of time. You don't just plant one church to reach that diverse a collection of groups of people. So you have to collect information both in the warp and woof of your area. The fabric of evangelism in that area may depend on geography. It may depend on demographics. So you collect both. You have to match projects with planters, and it's a dynamic process that needs active advocacy by the ADOM or strategist. The way the best strategists I know do it is when they bring a church planter in as a candidate, they'll have what they feel like are 3 or 4 possible projects, and they'll put that planter and his wife in the car, and they'll drive around. And what I mean by active advocacy is the strategist or DOM will sell that project to the planter. Yeah, I can see how, if God works here, this is the kind of church that might emerge. And then they go to the next area, and he does the same thing. Maybe different characteristics, but again, he helps them try and capture what could happen there. And so on for 3 and 4 sites. And he's praying all the time, God, grip this planter's heart with one of these opportunities. And the typical response, if the process works right, is when you talk to the planter, if he's genuinely called, he'll tell you at the end, that second place we went to, I just really felt something stir in my heart. I could really see us planting a church there. That's part of the matching process. The planter has to catch a vision for the opportunities that you have. It's possible they'll go away not having been gripped by any of the opportunities. He may actually come with his own bias for a particular place. And you may need to explore that with him and see if God's speaking through that there's a place you hadn't thought of that needs a church plant. So this is a dynamic process, finding sites and people groups, matching the planter, this dynamic front end to the whole process. Finding planters. You can look at the seminary. Dr. Payne is developing church planters all the time. How many do you have in your system now? Well, guess at a number. Okay, so 30 guys went out, different capacities. You can also look at colleges. We're trying to cultivate and train college students to help with church planting, starting college churches and other kinds of multi-housing starts. Career sources. Some of the best church planters are career people with entrepreneurial gifting. One case I know in Southern California, there was a guy that was the vice president of a window manufacturing company, and he was recruited to plant a church. So while continuing as a vice president at this company, he worked with the strategist to plant a church there in Southern California. And he did the preaching. The strategist helped him some with logistics and administration. He grew the church up to about 300 people. And he had so much fun doing this church plant that he was offered an opportunity to take a larger company in Florida. He took that opportunity, and as soon as he moved there, he planted a church there. Still kept his career. Didn't need much outside support except for the funding of the church itself. He didn't need any salary. So you look at career sources. There are career people, there are early retirees that may have the energy and the entrepreneurial gifting, and you can train them to plant churches. But screening requires trained screeners. So you're going to have to develop a pool of people who can assess for general aptitude and character. I use a team of assessors from Bluebonnet Association that Dr. Minton has developed to assess students on campus. They're good. Now, with 18 projects behind them and a track record of overwhelming majority successes, they know what to look for in a church planter. Wide variety of styles and approaches, so they know how to match a planter to see if he's right for the particular strategy he wants to use. So they assess for general aptitude and character. But, as I talked about earlier, you have to match a planter with his passion. He has to really be willing to put his life down and invest in an area and die to see the church come out of that area. You can't have, if nothing else better comes along, yeah, I'd be willing to plant a church for you. It's like, no, come back when you can't do anything else, when you have to plant this church. They need passion. So you need to be developing trained assessors and coaches. In the short run, you'll probably have to use somebody else's. And that's okay. What you have to do, what Dr. Minton does, what Jim Gatliff, I think, has done, is whenever you assess, you bring in an expert and you bring one of your pastors who's willing to be trained to work with them, to be trained in how to assess, to be trained in how to, what to look for. It's best if the person assessing has planted before. That's the best situation. A veteran church planter will generally do the best job in assessing for a church planter. But in the case of Dr. Minton's team, only about half of them are veteran church planters. The rest of them are effective pastors who've grown their church. They understand ministry. They're not willing to remain stagnant in their own ministry. And they've turned out to be good assessors. As the pool of assessors grows, then you can even diversify towards assessing for specific contexts and models. There's no limit to how you can develop your ability to spot the right guy for an opportunity you see coming along. Now, forming the SPT, the strategic planning team. Who do you put on it? Well, there's three sets or kinds of partners. The state and the association are always in. We work as a family. We partner together. And so the state and association, and then by affiliation, the North American Mission Board puts resources into a project through the state convention. So we partner. So state and association are always in. There are particular churches that are asked by the ADOM or the strategist to be a part of this team. A church plant. We work for early participation by young churches. Possibly in their second year, we would ask them to be a partner. Now, their financial contribution may be small, but what it does is it puts into the DNA of that church, we are a church planting church. We are committed to extending the kingdom. And that's a good thing. It's invaluable for a church from the very first to understand that part of their kingdom obligation is to be a part of church planting. Perhaps a never sponsored before church. They've been watching from the sidelines for months or years. And you've heard from the pastor some beginning of excitement about what's happening in the association. So the ADOM or strategist has a meal with them and challenges them to be a part of a project to the extent that they can afford. And then you need probably at least one church that can be a major funding church. Whatever major would be in your context. Maybe it's $500 a month. Maybe it's $1,000. But one major funding source. This last, the planter. The planter's part of the strategic planning team. Not only that, but at least in the Bluebonnet Association's plan, he leads the team. He leads the strategic planning team. That's his responsibility. Now, he's accountable to the members of the team, but he also leads it. So that's who's on it. Okay, forming the SPT, how? Usually a project begins when the ADOM or strategist matches a project tentatively with a planter and then invites potential partners to meet together to assess the planter. Now, this would be different for Jim Gatliff and for Dr. Minton. Dr. Minton always has the potential SPT partners at the assessment of the planter. Jim Gatliff does not. He uses his assessors and himself. He's always at the assessment of that planter for the project. Now, as the number of plants increases, I would say to him that's probably going to become more difficult. He may have to change his system. But there is a first meeting to assess the planter and agree to call him to the project. There's a second meeting, once the planter's been approved, where the planter then can present his plan, where it can be reviewed by the partners, and then they can sign the dotted line on support. There's a covenant. On that covenant, partners commit to funding, and they form the first quarter budget. The planter commits to implement his strategy and to be accountable. I've got a copy of a sample covenant. This one's used by the Puget Sound Baptist Association in the Pacific Northwest, but it is one that was originally developed by Dr. Minton and then modified for them. So if you'll pull that out, it's got four blank lines at the top. A sample so you can actually see one. Now, the thing that's missing from this one that's on one that would be used in Bluebonnet Association is there's another page in the back where the partners actually write in the amounts they're committing to. So they sign off on, okay, I'm going to give $500 a month for 2 years. Or I'm going to give $500 a month for the first year, $250 a month for the second year. So there's actually a financial commitment page. It's not on this one, but it would be attached. You can look through that. and see if there's any questions you have about it. And at the end of this particular session, we'll try and take some questions about how this is used. This is used to reassure and protect the partners. All of the partners. It's so that nobody feels insecure about the direction the partnership's going to go. The funding partners, they have the assurance that the planter is going to implement a particular strategy. The planter understands that the partners in signing this are not going to pull out for trivial reasons. I just don't like the way the planter's planting the church, so we're not going to be a partner anymore. No. You signed this. In it, it says that the only reasons for pulling out of a partnership on the part of a funding partner are theological divergence. The planter is demonstrating heresy in his approach. The fact that his methods are not the methods you would use is not grounds to terminate the partnership. Again, you trust the planter, you trust the strategy. That's been a very important part of the whole plan. We'll get to that during the question time. You can ask some questions about it. This next system, the fourth one, expanding the resource base. So the staff is always on the lookout for potential planters and partners with church planter training centers. What do I mean by that? I mean that these guys draw from, in the case I've already mentioned, John Wooster's team church. He trains a lot of church planters. He proves them in the field. And when he comes to one of these associations and says, I have this dynamite church planter. I really think he's going to be productive. I've assessed him. I've looked at his skills. Well, John Wooster's an expert. If John Wooster came to me and said, I've got this guy I think you ought to sponsor, I would jump on it. I would do whatever it took to form a partnership. There's another group in our area, GlocalNet. Bob Roberts is the pastor of Northwood Church, and he's a church planter training center. Again, he does a very good job of assessing and training. If he came to me and said, I have this church planter that's proven himself in the field to be very effective in evangelism and starting things, I would do whatever it took to use that guy in a church plant. Because I trust these guys and the kind of men that they develop. They'll be men of character. They'll be men with the right wiring. They'll be men with skill. So the staff is on the lookout. In our area, we probably have 5 or 6 church planter training centers. That's churches that have been planted that have pastors with a heart to train others, and they in turn and polish the skills of future church planters. Now, you may not have those in your area. If you don't, you need to search for them. You can come to one of the seminaries. Dr. Payne probably knows of some churches that have been planted by men who have a heart to train church planters and are constantly producing men who are qualified to plant in your area. The staff invites new partners with each project. This is very important. Again, you're trying to avoid stagnation. You're trying to create a situation where your resource base is expanding, and one of those key resources are partners for the project. So you're constantly working to invite new partners. Some of these guys that now, they brag on the association. We're a church planting association. We're always seeing new churches planted. It's great. You can go to them. Yes, it is great. Why don't you come on board? You know, be a partner this time. And in the case of plants, in Dr. Minton's situation, he requires that church plants escrow a certain percentage of their general receipts dedicated to church planting. So from day one, in their budget, there's a percentage set aside to be a partner in a church plant. Now, what this means is because it's escrowed and it's a percentage, there's no question about going to the church planted saying, we need you to step up and be a partner in this project. Well, you know, it's a struggle. We just don't have the funds. Yeah, you really do. You have the funds. That's part of the conditions of them accepting you as a partner, is that you will be a church planting church. And in the assessment, I'll say this, in the assessment of church planters, one of the criteria that's looked for is a kingdom heart rather than an empire heart. You know, there's some guys that are all about building their empire. There's some guys who are about the kingdom of God. You assess and screen, there may be people with tremendous talent, but it's all about me and my stuff and what I can do and how big a church I can grow. And you want men who are about the kingdom and what together in partnership we can do and how we, by the power of God, can extend the kingdom. That's what you want. There are also, in the case of Jim Gatliff, partners outside the association for funding while the funding is growing internally. And the funding will grow internally as you plant churches, because the churches that partner tend to give more to the cooperative program as they begin to see a return on their investment of dollars and time and people to the kingdom. They see the return in new lives saved. I mean, there's not much more thrilling to sit in a strategic planning team, which I've done with some of my Nehemiah guys, and hear the stories of people who've gotten saved, of opportunities that just were God things. You couldn't arrange the opportunities that these church planters have had to minister and make an impact. It's exciting. It stirs your faith. And so funding ends up growing. We'll take some questions now.
What questions do you have? Yes.
My question is on exploring, looking for information on demography and other things. My little experience have shown me that some of the information, either in the internet or through NAM or even IMB, are not correct. For example, like with the movement of population and immigration, you will ask for information on a particular area. They will tell you either they don't have certain group of people living there, but you know those people that are living around, and it's frustrating. I work in a Cincinnati area in Ohio, So the information they have in the whole region is flawed. So I don't know whether it applies to other regions or other cities or areas. So it's something to watch out for.
Okay. I think what I've found is, yes, in a dynamic immigration situation, the information is oftentimes behind. The two things I would comment on that, one, you may be, you may be the expert on where to find particular people groups if you've kept track. There are organizations you develop as an association. You have to develop the resources you trust for demographic information. In my case, in Fort Worth, there's a group called World Relief who resettle refugees. See, if I talk to them, I have the latest and greatest information on what refugee groups, what people groups just moved in the area. And they can tell me what apartment complex they live in, because they settle them in groups. Sometimes you may have to just use the information that comes from the U.S. Census or NAM or the people group research site at NAM as just a hint. And you'll have to develop local resources. The school system always knows who's coming into their school system. So you can talk to them sometimes about what people groups are coming in the area and what general location. What I do with my church planters as far as coaching is I tell them, your church plant plan is really only 80%. You're not going to really know who it is you're going to reach until you are on site and you begin to actually put shoe leather to the situation. You talk to people, you listen. So as far as where do you get this, you know, if it's inaccurate, you're going to have to develop your own sources. Now, are you interested in one church plant, or are you a strategist for many church plants?
I'm just researching on the area.
Say again?
I'm just researching on the...
You're researching the area for a particular church plant?
Probably multiple.
For many of them. Yeah, and as that, you're going to have to develop your own resources, the go-to people who are experts on your area, whatever they may be, school system, other local government sources, the county planning commission, they know where new housing is going to go in. If there's an organization, a Christian organization like World Relief that resettles immigrants, you may have to develop good relationships with some of the staff there. That's how I would go about, as a strategist, developing my information base that I can trust. So I hope that helps. It's work, and it takes time. But the information is out there, and you can develop a clear picture of your area as you develop contacts. Other questions?
You mentioned cooperative program a moment ago, and that's the only reason why I'm going to ask this question. I'll form it as a hypothetical situation, but it's actually a real-life issue in my state. A church with a passion for church multiplication, church planting, does what you're saying, forms a school for church planting, has great success, plants 8 churches or 10, has a goal for many more in the next 10 years, but cooperative program-wise gives 0.01%, but yet goes to the state convention seeking pastoral assistance, goes to NAM for resources and different things like that. Is that a problem? I kind of see it as one, but my question is, what's the solution if it is a problem?
Obviously, there's a problem of heart, of wanting to partner. In one sense, in the financial sense. But I'll just, you know, reveal something more about myself. On a pragmatic level, if they're producing top-notch church planters who can get the job done, and those church planters are willing to covenant with me, where they say, yeah, I want to be a part of the association. I want a team. Yeah, of course I'll escrow this percentage. Of course, the other part of the covenant, they give to the cooperative program. It's part of the covenant. If they are willing to partner, even if the mother church is a pretty poor partner, then yes, I'll still work with their people. I'll take their church planters. I'll even work with them and let them be a partner, because what I'm doing is I'm creating a cadre of new churches that are loyal to the association, that do participate in the cooperative program, that do understand the benefits of teaming, both financially and in other resources. That would be my pragmatic answer, is that even though the mother church may have some things that could be criticized, if the daughter churches are teaming churches, fully a part of the system and the process, then I'll still go with it. Because eventually, they will grow to large, healthy churches whose influence will far outweigh the influence of that one church that maybe needs to rethink their priorities. Another question?
Your coaching process, are they more mentors, more supervisors, a combination of the both? And who are your coaches, and how do you allocate that responsibility?
I don't think I can answer in the general case for each of these systems. In the case of Nehemiah Church Planters, we would have a requirement that they have a veteran church planter as a coach for 2 years. So it would be somebody who's coaching them in skills. The character side, the partnership tends to develop friendships. And so the mentoring is probably more group mentoring, or in the case of the one I'm most familiar with, Dr. Minton's, Dr. Minton has been a mentor to a lot of these church planters as far as concern and care for the personal issues that come up, for people in their church that become difficult in the church plant, that sort of thing. He's probably been the mentor. And the coach has been more of a skill coach. Now, in the general case, I'm not sure how they handle that. I would guess that it's probably the same. They have an expert planter who coaches the new planter on how to get the job done in that area. And then there's someone else who's more pastoral that takes care of the mentoring side of things.
Two different people.
But I'm not sure it's a formal arrangement of, okay, we're going to have a coach and a mentor. Because some of the church planters that we coach also have pastoral hearts. And as they're trusted, they probably do some mentoring as well. But it's probably mentoring by issue.
Let's take a five-minute break. We'll pause here, and that way we can stretch and stand up for a second. We'll start back in about 5 minutes or so.
Any adjustments?